You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 133. Today is Thursday, April 4th, as you are listening to this on the podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the live stream as well. We have baseball, ladies and gentlemen. It is no more speculation, no more bold predictions and chalkboard picks. We've got about a week in the books here, Steve, and a lot to react to. You could pretty much spin the wheel on what players, what breakouts, what disappointments early on that we want to overreact to. But this is it, man. Nothing is better than checking the lineups, you know, texting the home league group thread, complaining about your team, scrambling to find somebody on the waiver wire. And now is the time to really assess the guys that we like that have our attention, because it's this time of year where every season there's breakouts, there's ones that not only seem to emerge the most but also have the ability to impact your teams the most because of how long they're doing it for your roster. So very excited to talk about some of these overreactions, Steve, if you will. Some of these guys are names that we've talked about throughout the offseason. Other ones, of course, are kind of popping up out of nowhere. So talk to me about how the first week's going for you, man. Happy baseball.
Yeah, it's great. As a serial box score checker, someone that's constantly refreshes their phone and looks at box scores, like, I'm not surprised by anything in the morning, essentially, unless I'm asleep before, like, the West Coast games, which sometimes I'm up for those, too. It's refreshing, and also, like, you're reminded of how much of a constant check-in and almost drain it is monitoring all these scores. I know not everyone's like that, and a crazy person like me that literally looks at everything as it's happening. You know, it's crazy. Like, spring training, I check in here and there, and it's kind of like me getting used to checking the baseball box scores and looking at what's going on, being more casual about it. But
getting reps in.
Yeah, you get reps in, but then in season, it's go time when you're back into it really is a long, arduous process. But that being said, I think we talk about every year, you don't want to overreact and focus on things and make too big of deals out of whatever, seven games at this point for most teams, even if that, probably even less with the rainouts, right? Mm-hmm. Most teams are probably at five or six games as we're recording this. Maybe the Dodgers and the Padres have two more since that early start, but there's still things that are actionable, and we talk about every year, because if you do add a guy now that's a mainstay on your team, you get them for the full season rather than just you know, the last 2 months, or you know, even if they do go cold, there's a chance that they pick it up again and you get two of the hot streaks instead of just the one, right? So there's definitely some actionable items. I know it is still technically overreacting over this short sample, right? Like, I think Vlad Sedler of FTN put out a tweet about how, you know, Freddie Freeman had no RBIs and no home runs through last season, how Joey Gallo was a top performer in the first seven games of the season. And he was like, it's early. And it is, but it's still time to react or overreact, because that's what makes this game amazing. It's a big picture game that we react to in small samples.
Yeah, we're not gonna not talk about it. When we got a podcast, we've done 133 of these. We're not gonna not overreact here, guys. So welcome and join us. And as always, you can let us know your overreactions or any topics, guys, that you want us to hit on. We'll be here every week now that the regular season is underway. And you guys can find us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified. Steve is at Stav8818. This time of year, we usually got some extra listeners. I know everybody's kind of plugged in. Would mean a ton if you guys can go out, give us a rating and review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. And of course, that goes for the whole network, which gets plenty of love. But this year, we've introduced more podcasts, and there's so much good content out there. Every morning, Steve, I'm waking up consuming the little 15-minute ones Casey Bubba.
There's another standard baseball, like not fantasy baseball feed now for Pitcherless Podcast too. I know that Eno and Nick's pitching podcast, The Craft, is on there. So like non-fantasy related baseball stuff podcast, there's a whole other feed. So be sure to check that out. There's
the Plus Pitch podcast with Nick Pollock podcast, for PL Pro members. So a lot of great stuff.
There's a new pitching fab podcast on Fridays that Nick is coming out with. I think he had the first one last Friday.
The companion piece to
On the Wire. Yes. Yep. I think that's for PL Plus members. But, I mean, there's just so much good content this time of year on the site and on the podcast feed. So, yeah, we're whatever, you know, if WAF isn't your cup of tea, there's definitely a pod. There's so many on there and so many good ones on there that you'll find one. So, anything baseball you need, we got you covered.
So, talking our topic tonight, Steve, what are we interested in after week one is kind of how we've couched this, because some of these guys are rostered a little bit higher. Some of them, we've looked at Yahoo roster rates, if you will, and some of them are more 12 team available, 14 team available. We'll kind of get through them as we go. But before we jump in, I mean, talk to me about the mindset this time of year. Of course, we want to go to the StatCast numbers, because that's just kind of, we're creatures of habit, but it is too early for a lot of those to be statistically sticky, if you will. But, you know, like we said, we're going to react to some stuff. And on top of that, there's other things we can look at, like playing time updates, some approach changes early on, or even continuing approaches that we saw and liked from last year that might be a little bit confirmation bias because, again, it's such a small sample size. But if we went into the season with a narrative we liked and we're seeing it, that's a good sign. And the flip side of that is if we went into the season really liking a narrative, AJ Puck, then, you know, we really would like to see the results follow that. So we have to kind of question if they're not as well. So talk to me about where your head's at, Steve. I know you're pretty aggressive usually early on, if I recall correctly, over our 3.5 seasons of doing this.
I am. And that sometimes comes back to bite me if I drop someone too quick. But I also like to think that I am pretty good at scooping up a breakout, even if it does come at the cost of someone that may start slow and ends up performing well on another team. But, you know, I'm confident enough in my abilities to replace any of that lost production. Then this is for more shallow leagues, right? Like weekly moves leagues. It's a different animal, right? I would be much more hesitant to drop guys that I drafted in like the first 15 rounds in like the standard TGF, even 15 to 20 in like TGFBI, like the deeper leagues of 15 teams, weekly moves with 5 outfielders, 2 catchers, things like that. But in a 12 team or even like my home league 14, it's a 12 team now, but it was a 14 team last year. So that takes some getting used to. But there with the bottom of my roster, I'm churning and burning. I don't have much of a leash, especially in 12 team, 10 team leagues. You gotta act quickly. Especially in first come first serve leagues. I know a lot of the leagues have waiver periods when guys are dropped, but I think most people don't do weekly fab leagues, honestly. Right. And there are a lot of first come first serve. So you got to be quick for that. That being said, there are things to care about and to react to. Someone that I'm going to give multiple shout outs to on the show. It's a great follow on Twitter. Thomas Nestico. At TJ Stats, he has his own like Stuff Plus metric. He does amazing breakdowns of pitchers. Basically, any interesting pitcher, if you go to his Twitter feed, there's a breakdown with like the stuff, the location, and just details about the start he sums up perfectly in little nice concise tweets with everything you need to know, basically about every starter that you would care about. And he put out a tweet yesterday about what you should care about early in the season. And he talked about the metrics that he would put the most weight on, and that's max exit velocity, right? Like something that, especially if you're setting career highs, and sprint speed, things that, you know, stabilize essentially in a sample of one. And talked about the fact that there's not really enough data to look at metrics such as ground ball rate, like any batted ball metrics that need a larger sample to stabilize. So pull rate, ground ball rate, like it's just too much noise in a 6 to 7 game sample. But that being said, there's also things that you could put some weight on that he talked about, with like plate discipline. So chase percentage, whip percentage, anything that comes out of, you know, how your plate approach is something that stabilizes quickly and that we could put some weight in, even if we are only just 6%, this, you know, 6 games into the season. And then we talk about like the rule of thumb with barrel rate and hard hit rate, which stabilize around like 50 balls in play. For most guys, what, we're probably at like 10 to 20, right? So yeah, we're like halfway there. Like probably takes to like the middle of April to get there for guys that make a lot of contact. Spoiler alert, I was looking at someone that now we're going to talk about in a few that is now making a lot of contact. So he had 20 balls in play, which is probably pretty high for someone right now. So it's probably more like 10 to 15 for most guys. But there is some stuff that you could look at, and TJ did a great job of that. Thomas Nesco at TJ Stats. Give him a follow. He is well worth it.
Yeah, we might have to call him Nestico or TJ Stats because we already got a TJ.
We got a TJ on this show.
But
he does call his stuff plus TJ stuff plus too. So I know some people kind of like, I don't know how I feel about calling it like TJ stuff plus, right? It's like, oh, what?
Yeah,
the stuff
curse
is leading to Tommy John.
Right,
you know?
This is a curse.
But he does have his own stuff plus metric, which is awesome that he's able to do that and puts it out there for everyone to see. So shout out to TJ Nestico.
Yeah, and we'll probably do like a pitcher breakout show dedicated sometime in April. But on the pitching side, Steve, we're definitely looking at like, you know, velocity, ability to carry that velocity throughout the start. I mean, from a control standpoint, definitely looking at like strike percentage, walk rate, things like that. That you know, this time of year, a lot of guys that we have targeted as like a breakout pitchers, a lot of times the only question mark is like, can they get that 11% walk rate down, things like that, for a guy like Puck versus a guy like Luis Gil, that you just want to watch early on. Pitch mix, of course, new pitches, and when people go nuts, I think it is, sometimes this can be overblown, but it is important to look at the opponents as well. Consider the weather. Definitely. A little bit, because this time of year is also weird with 40 degree days. So it's not to say that there's nothing actionable, but sometimes you gotta, put a little bit of water, cold water on it. But that's on the pitching side. And we'll have to do kind of a dedicated show, because a lot of these are hitters. We do have a few pitchers sprinkled in here, especially near the end, so stay tuned for that. But Steve, let's jump in and kind of, not sure in terms of order here, but it might be order of timeliness, because Mikel Garcia hit his third home run tonight. That is Mikel Garcia of the Kansas City Royals. Yes, the WA favorite we talked about last year, but one that we liked more as like a corner infielder or a util guy. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of performing like a starting third baseman, 75% rostered in Yahoo. So probably 10 teamers. This is, an ad potential, but Mikel Garcia looks like a different hitter in terms of the elevation of his contact this year. The three homers already, the broadcast tonight when he hit that homer out, was tuning in. I mean, a lot of us were with Corbin Burns and Cole Reagans, but the homer he hit was opposite field, and the broadcast was talking about how a lot of the things that people liked about him last year with the hard hit, the ability to hit to all fields, is just being helped out even more with the fact that he's elevating the ball and seems like hitting the ball harder as well. So your thoughts on Mikel Garcia, what are you seeing here with the batted ball metrics, and how good is he? Because I think we talked a lot about Royals, but not a lot about Mikel Garcia in the offseason, at least on the show.
Yeah, we talked about him a lot last year, so this is pretty satisfying seeing it. I think he was a very popular sleeper, I think, in the offseason. I think we talked about him a good amount. And we do, I believe, have a share of him on our best ball team. I think I have him in TGFBI as well, or in RazSlam, one of the two.
I'll check in on that.
But it's pretty rewarding to talk a guy that we talked about last year a lot and liked a lot of the underlying metrics, especially how hard he hit the ball. The speed was obviously apparent. He had 20 plus stolen bases last season, and all that was needed, right? It was like the Brian Hayes syndrome. We just need to lift the ball a little bit, and he's starting to do that. That being said, we just talked about how it's too small of a sample to judge anything as far as fly ball rate versus ground ball rate, and to say that Garcia is a full breakout, I think that's a little bit premature. But you know, he had just two in a tweet from friend of the program Mike Curlin. He tweeted about how in 515 plate appearance last year, he had just two pull side barrels. So that's barreling the ball to the pull side, which is how you get the most out of your barrels. Like, the barrels do the most damage when they're to the pull side. He only had two of those last year, and he only pulled 34 fly balls and line drives. Another, obvious correlation there. If pulled barrels are the best, pull fly balls and line drives are also going to perform the best. And because of that, he only had four homers last year. And this was through yesterday's game, so before tonight's home run. Through only five games, he already had three pull side barrels, so one more than last year. I know tonight's home run was opposite field, so I'm not saying that he can't do damage that way too, especially when he hit the ball as hard as Garcia does. But it is super encouraging that a guy that basically did not do this at all last year has already shown signs. Sure, that is going to regress, and I don't think he's going to be this, 30 homer hitter. But I think that we can now expect at least like 18 to 20 homers, maybe 25 on like a really good year. I know the ballpark is tough, but you could bump up your power projection for Mikel Garcia is basically what I think you can take from this. And that's really good for a guy that hits the ball this hard, is going to chip in stolen bases, and plays really, really good defense at third base. So he's going to be in the lineup every day. And is also cousins with Ronald Acuna, I found out in a YouTube video this weekend, just watching some baseball YouTube. Shout out Baseball Doesn't Exist, a great channel there about Acuna. They did a video and talked about all his cousins, and Mikel Garcia is one of them. So
crazy.
Yeah. I'm surprised that he's rostered 75% of Yahoo leagues. I thought it would be lower, but it should be much closer to 100, in my opinion.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of surprising things, interesting things about his profile. But yeah, I mean, just last season, the hard hit rate, like, I don't know, I just, because of his speed, I didn't peg him, even for as much as we liked him last year, as being like a top 10 hard hit guy in the league. And then it was just mainly all grounders. His launch angle was 6.1 degrees on average this season. Like you said, way too early to make anything of it, but it's at 18, which would be enough to be like the biggest jump since Christian Yelich type of a thing. So yeah, there's some good articles, like going back, like revisionist history here. There's good breakout or assessment articles on PitcherList on Mikel Garcia in the offseason, and they love everything except for the launch angle. So like, if that truly has been solved, he could, I mean, honestly, with that 23 steals last year and how many games? 123 games.
Yeah.
Like, this guy could quickly become like a top 4 or 5 round player in leagues next year, because the average is there. He already hits the ball hard. He's only 24 years old. He can run. Like, it's just everything you would want if he can elevate the ball. So really exciting. I mean, how long do you wait until you target him with like trade, Steve, on like a buy high? You wait till that 50 ball sample size?
I mean, if anyone's willing to sell, I think it's a good buy high even now, right? Like, the launch angle is like 18 right now. It was 6.1 last year. Like, if you cut the difference, like, that's going to be enough. You know, that should lead to like an 8 to 10% barrel rate, which is, you know, a 20 homer hitter with this guy's speed and how he hits the ball, you can easily run good BABIPs, right? He doesn't strike out that much. It was just 22% last year. Like, he's still at 272, but it was just a 680 last year, but it was just 681 OPS. Like, if his slug goes up 100 points, you know, you're looking at an 800 OPS guy with 30 steal potential. Mm-hmm. That becomes a really, really good fantasy player. So I would be in on it now, right? Like, I think that whether it's a trade, an ad, it's a good target.
Yeah, and to put a bow on it, Steve, we do have a share in that best ball that we got, a shared best ball. So, yeah, love to see it. And Mikel Garcia will be keeping tabs on him. Moving along to a guy we talked about last week, because he was the chalkboard pick for James, who joined us as a listener guest from the PitchCon prize. It's Christopher Morel, cleanup hitter for the Chicago Cubs. We're seeing some plate discipline improvements where over 30% strikeout rate the past couple of years. It is way down. Is this a typo, Steve, that it's under 5% so far?
Under 5%. Yeah, I believe he struck out one time in 22 plate appearances, maybe twice.
Yeah, so Morel is on fire. I mean, at least quick tabs on my like home league settings, ranked 15th in the league. But yeah, 381 average, is 1171 OPS, thanks to a couple homers. No steals yet, but he should be able to chip in. Yeah, I mean, Morel here, Steve, it's, again, too early to say it, but if he even gets that strikeout rate down to like 25%, then this would be a total breakout season for him, given how much that was like the one black eye to his game. What are you seeing with Morel early on here?
Yeah, there are no questions about his power. He has as much power basically as anyone in the league, like,
which is crazy with his stature. Like, yeah, I guess 5'11", like, he's not small, but 145 pounds. Like,
no, I was listening on the Cubs broadcast. That was just they had that up even on opening day as his listed weight, 145 pounds, on like the big screen, but, they updated it. He's like 205. So yeah, he's not this little tiny guy, and even if you watch him, but he hasn't ran a barrel rate lower than 13.4% in, you know, close to like 230 games now at the major league level. So this guy can square up the baseball and is going to hit home runs. The only thing that was holding him down as far as offensively was that strikeout rate. It was above 30% at all of his major league stops. And therefore that kept the batting average down, and kept the overall production down. He doesn't play great defense, so it was easy to rest him. But the Cubs want to give him run in the field, and at the plate. Like, he's batted fourth, I think, every day. He's played third base. There's been some misplays and it's been an adventure, but Craig Counsell has said that they want to get him out there as much as possible. And when he's not at third, he's playing he's DH. He's in the lineup. They don't want to take his bat out of the lineup. But if any of these plate discipline gains are real, like, this could be a fantasy superstar. He has a 20% power rate right now, a 50% hard hit rate, and yeah, just the 4.5% strikeout rate. Like, if he keeps it under 30%, he hit 247 last year with how hard he hit the ball and how well he runs. I know not necessarily for steals, but, you know, that has an ability to lead for high BABIP. And it wasn't even that high last year. It was just 303. So this is a guy that could run like a 350 BABIP with how hard he hits the ball, how well he runs. So there can be, you know, a 270 average, I think, in there. And if the strikeout rate goes down even further, like, the upside for that is, like, you know, you're talking 280, 35 to 40 homers with the raw power that he has. He is someone that I'm very, very, very excited about.
I think the only thing I would throw out is they played the Rangers, which really just had Eovaldi as a good opponent on the mound, and then the Rockies, where you know, it'll be interesting to see, can he sustain this against some better pitching, especially the strikeout rate.
The strikeout rate, sure. But
still, I mean, there's a lot of room to give there. It's not like he's striking out 25% right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, that, I mean, sadly, no shares, Steve. It was just a time in the draft where I was kind of targeting a lot of pitchers to kind of round out the rotation. But, yeah, I know we've talked about in the past, and we've seen what hot months look like for him. So, yeah, I totally see what you're saying.
And just to go under the hood for the strikeout rate, because, yeah, sure, the 4.5% is an outlier. But what makes up that strikeout rate, he's only chasing 17.8% of the time. That chase rate was 32% in 2023. And he's making 89.5% contact rate, where the contact rate in the past was in the 60s, which is like bottom percentile of the league. And his 89% contact rate right now would put him close to the top. So there are some impressive gains under the hood leading to that lower strikeout rate that has me very, very excited about Morel. Like, we've seen the hot stretches for Morel, and it's easy to say, oh, we've seen this before, don't fall for him. But we've never seen him do this with contact and plate discipline. Like, there's been, like with what his profile was, it was leading to 2-3 weeks where he would hit 8 homers, you know, have 7 homers in 8 games, and you know, get to a point where, like, he was demoted. But now those hot streaks can come again, and it just might not be as far of a valley because the contact rate is even slightly better, or like league average. That's what has me super excited. And I think that, you know, you should be super, super excited about Morel.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
We've never seen this contact rate.
No, you're right.
Before. We've never seen that before.
You're right. This is what a lot of people were hoping for out of like O'Neill Cruz with the power and plate discipline and contact and
Cruz
everything.
Cruz has never done something like that before. He's never made this much contact.
Right. This is what we were hoping to see. So we'll see. I'm just 6 games in. Cubs, and a couple, Bradford and some other random on the Rangers. It was weird. It's been a weird staff. But, yeah, I heard, and if it is indeed a breakout, it's going to be a monstrous one, because that is the upside for Christopher Morel. We got 9 other guys that we're going to be talking through here, folks. If you're having fun, stick with us, but we got to take our first ad break and we'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, another one who is getting our attention, not with the plate discipline, but with the bat, with the pop, if you will, just 31% rostered. It's Will Benson, who's been kind of a strange beneficiary for the Reds with, you know, the Matt McClain issues, but he's now locked into playing time and has a 90% hard hit rate, a 316 batting average, 1065 OPS. And yeah, when he's on this, I guess, against right-handed pitching, so about 2/3 of the games, he's hitting second in that lineup with that home ballpark. A lot of excitement, but also the 42% strikeout rate so far. Not sure what we make of Will Benson. I think you at least got to, it seems like a spec ad, if nothing else, because it's been impressive with what he's been able to do with the hard hit, things of that nature. But talk to me about what you're seeing from Will Benson, a guy who was somewhat on the radar last year, but just seemed like he was in that crowded but exciting Reds offense. What do you think on the 25-year-old outfielder?
The biggest thing for me with Benson, I know the hard hit rate pops, but the strikeout rate is concerning. But the biggest thing for me is the playing time. He did not play versus lefties last year, and he's been in the lineup versus every lefty. I think the Reds have seen 3 now, which is a decent percentage of their games. Like half their games were versus lefties. And he's still been in the lineup. And then he's batting second versus righties. So that's pretty telling to me. I think Cincinnati's offense is going to be really good, especially when it turns the summer and they start playing some home games. I don't think they've been at Great American Small Park just yet. But Will Benson I think is, yeah, it's definitely more of a spec ad, and the strikeout rates are concerning, and it looks like it's still going to be there to stay. But hey, he was productive last year in more of a part-time role, so if he gets more at-bats and just holds his own versus lefties, we could see another guy that's going to have some interesting power and speed. I know Morel has a good sprint speed, but he really hasn't shown the willingness to run. Will Benson had 19 stolen bases in 108 games last year. So,
and 92nd percentile on sprint speed. While you brought up that metric earlier, so that's this season. I'm sorry, so far. So one of the ones. So it's even better than it was last year. Yeah. So yeah, I mean this could. I mean, I guess you said how many games last year? 108.
108 games, 11 homers, 19 steals. Was caught three times. So 19 for 22. Good success rate as well.
Yeah, and even with the strikeout rate, that average being up.
He takes a walk too, so he had a 365 OBP, and sure, striking out 31% of the time. I think that average on the higher side, it would be more like 250, not the 275 that he had last year, but that could still be an OBP of 350 ish if he walks, 10 to 12% of the time like he's been doing the last 2 years. So, It's a good opportunity in that ballpark, in that lineup context, with how hard he hits the ball, the fact that he plays every day is intriguing.
It is, and just 31% rostered, like we said, in Yahoo League, so definitely available in like 12 teamers. Go out, get yourself some Will Benson. But let's shift over to another guy in that same roster range. It's Brendan Donovan, Steve, one I've been pumped about. He's one of my top share guys this season. I think it's 4 out of 5 NFBC leagues. And so far, so good. Betting 308 with a 938 OPS. The barrel rate, albeit extremely small sample size, at 12% or 11.8%. What I like most, I think, this goes back to kind of the intro where we're talking about narratives and trying to connect what we saw last year to this year. If you tuned in to me talking about Donovan in the past few weeks, one thing I really liked was an article about how he basically broke out in his last couple months last season. No one was paying attention because they were too busy thinking the Cardinals were a dumpster fire. But Donovan finally started putting it together with some of the pop that we were excited about in the preseason. He talked about how it was all about his aggression on the first pitch, where he was getting way too passive. And he's kept that aggression so far in this short sample that we've seen. And it looks good. I mean, there's the strikeout rate is up a little bit to like 25%, but we talk all the time about how if that's what it takes to kind of unlock a little extra power, you might take that trade off, especially for a guy who walks quite a bit, because that doesn't really help us in 5x5 leagues. I like Donovan here. He leads off every day for the Cardinals, just 29% rostered. I would, just from where I was at a couple weeks ago, what we've already seen, I would endorse Brendan Donovan over Will Benson. That might be a split camp on that, Steve, because I'm a homer on that one. But I do think there's a really good player here with Donovan, and he's shown it already. So what are your thoughts for Donovan, kind of multi-position guy? And any other notes to add on this one?
Yeah, I think in Fantrax, my home league, I think this might be for Yacht too, but he has first, second, third, and outfield. I think that might be right. So that's pretty useful, especially in daily move leagues where you can set your lineup each day.
He did leave the game. He did leave the game with an elbow thing after he got hit by pitch. So
yeah,
stay tuned on that for sure.
Yeah, has there been any news as far as like X-rays or anything on that? I haven't
nothing
seen an update.
Yet. Nope.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, I think the Cardinals' offense is better than people think.
Newt Barr coming back this weekend.
Yeah, Newt Barr coming back. I know they got up to a slow start, but that was versus like, some of the Dodgers' best pitchers like Glasnow, Yamamoto, right, and Bobby Miller striking out the world. That was tough three-game sample to judge that offense on. And I'm not opposed to Donovan and think he's a good ad. I think it would depend on what you need. If you need like power and speed and don't really care about average, then I would lean Benson. But if you need like position flexibility and maybe a little more average, I would go towards Donovan. But, you know, it's a better ballpark, too, for Benson. I think I like the Reds lineup a little better. I'm not sure. It's close. But
I'd give him that one, I think. Yeah. At least from last year and the start of this year.
Yeah, that's that. But it doesn't take much to have some of those veterans make that look like a foolish statement. But something I wanted to bring up regarding the Cardinals, but with the way Donovan's been hitting, with how Victor Scott's not necessarily hitting, but plays good defense and has great speed, I think that Jordan Walker may be the one who's in trouble when Nootbaar comes back. I know it might not be the move that he gets demoted right away, but he does have two options. Doesn't play as good defense as Victor Scott or Nootbaar. They pinch hit for Jordan Walker with like two outs in the ninth and runners on first and second, or like one out in the ninth with runners on first and second tonight versus the Padres. So that is something that I know that talk about small samples is a small sample one, but that tells me a lot of what they think about a current player in Jordan Walker. So just wanted to get your thoughts there.
Local radio driving home from work today was saying Victor Scott as if it was a foregone conclusion, but that
and a lot of people are a lot of people are saying Victor Scott's the one that's going to lose playing time, like it's a foregone conclusion, but I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, there might be because I think Dylan Carlson's on the IL as well, so like right now Alec Burleson's getting some run. I don't know, sometimes the Cardinals have a way of just rotating. You know, we've seen that in the past where it was like Edmund moving in and out. It seems like every year the Cardinals run with like four outfielders. So maybe they'll kind of do that for a little bit, but it does seem a little strange to, you know, for how much buzz Scott's getting and how good he is in the field. Yeah. You know, he got the steal the other day. I could see, I mean, we saw him demote Walker last year to get right, but yeah,
even if he is like shuffled in and out of the lineup, I think that could be a hurt for Walker's value. So
yeah,
I know he hasn't done much. It's been a small sample, but I was just pretty shocked when they pinch hit for him today in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I have not seen anything about like rationale or anything, but yeah, it's interesting. Worth keeping tabs on for sure. We'll find out this weekend when Nootbaar is expected to return there. Because mm-hmm. Otherwise, yeah, love some Victor Scott for some flash in the outfield there. Speaking of outfield, another guy that we've been liking, Steve, especially myself, as he is a chalkboard pick. Jung-Hoo Lee has been as advertised, seemingly, at least from the hit tool standpoint, a 292 average. He does have a homer, that beauty lefty swing, gotta love it. But the plate discipline has been excellent, which is what we expected. It's been like a 13% strikeout rate, 10% walk rate. I think people expect the K rate to even drop from there. But from what you had mentioned with to kick off the show with TJ Stats talking about sprint speed being a good indicator, that to me is the path forward for Jung-Hoo Lee, because he should deliver more pop than a Stephen Kwan. He's my comp because it's kind of that average guy, same range of the draft, that could really save your team, but you're wondering what else they're going to do besides runs and average. I think Jung-Hoo Lee has that 15 homer where Kwan might be more around 10, but Kwan's got the speed. Now, with Lee, he didn't run that much in the KBO, but 15th in the league so far in sprint speed. And that is where I'm really hoping that because he ran a little bit in spring training, that the Giants actually let him go on the base paths. If so, it's going to be a different looking type of breakout, but something that has honestly the upside of like, it sounds blasphemous, but even like a Luis Arias with some speed, some pop for Jung-Hoo Lee. So I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, no question. And it's early on, but I've liked what I'm seeing. And hopefully, yeah, we're not getting empty batting average here. But your thoughts on Jung-Hoo Lee, Steve? You threw him on the rundown. I was happy to see it.
He's already hit a ball 109 miles an hour, which is something that TJ Stats talked about. Max EV, Eno Saris talks about it a lot, how it's just a judge for raw power. To do that in just a six-game sample shows me already that he has, you know, more power than Stephen Kwan. Is running a 59% hard hit rate, which I don't know if Stephen Kwan's ever had a six game rolling average of a 59% hard hit rate. Maybe this year though, he has been pretty good.
He's looked good. Yeah.
I've loved myself some Stephen Kwan over the years too.
I know. Do we have shares? Do we have shares? Because we have been leading the train, and I thought there might be a little bit of a bounce back, but I got
it. It looks like there could be. And the Cleveland offense looks like it's peskier than it has been in years past. But hey,
just to
compare this, Stephen Kwan's max EV this year is 103, and his hard hit rate is 20.8%. So that just goes to show you the difference. Stephen Kwan does have a homer, does have a steal, and is hitting .310, but his OPS is .782. Jung Ho Lee, I think, in like the 90th percentile outcome, could run like a over 800 OPS, right? Which is amazing for a guy that makes this much contact, can take a walk, and should throw in some speed. He does have an attempt. He's been thrown out though.
Oh, that's good. I actually did not realize Jung Ho Lee had an attempt. Okay, that makes me feel like, at least, I mean, we've said it ad nauseum that it's mostly about the intent. So, love to see that. Another outfielder, just to keep us moving here, that's rostered much less at 38%, but offers plenty in the speed department. It's Jose Siri, who was kind of not like home league, but in some of those, he was on my Raz Slam team last year, Steve, that went off, and I think we had some shares.
Yeah,
he's always been a guy.
We liked him a lot last year. Yeah, I think maybe.
Yeah, this offseason, Siri said that he had all intentions to go out and steal 30 bases. He already has 3 steals. He had a homer, I think it was yesterday or day before. Hitting .250, you're going to see a lot of strikeouts with Jose Siri. That is part of what you're signing up for. But what's intriguing to me is he is playing every day, despite not being able to hit lefties at all. And the Rays kind of always tinkering with platoons and everything. But if he's playing every day, he's going to get a lot of opportunities to steal. And I wouldn't bet against him at this point on getting that milestone of 30 steals. Just 38% rostered. This is not a rabbit. There is some pop here to go with it. And the average, you never know. It could be anywhere from what, like 230 to 260? I'd have to pull up where he landed last year. Might have even been
222 last year, but he did have 25 homers and 364 plate appearances. So, like, essentially 60% of, like, what you would expect for a full season. Mm-hmm. And the Rays have shown the propensity to play everyday players every day if their fielding is really good. And Jose Siri's fielding is elite, right? Like, they ran Kevin Kiermaier
Kiermaier's there great
for years, and Kiermaier, like, couldn't hit a lick.
Mm-hmm.
Siri might not be able to hit above 220, but
year is 242, so maybe it's not like, you know.
Yeah, that's probably a lot of, like, you know, the fact that he hits the ball so hard and runs. I guess sprint speed's not an XBA, but it's because he hits the ball so hard. But that's a good thing. He did have an 87 percentile barrel rate last year. Is running just an 8.3% this year, but, you know, it's still too early, and he'll regress towards what I think he was last year.
Do you think he's under-rostered, Steve? Sorry to interrupt.
I think so. He's the kind of guy in like 10 and 12 teams that are probably on and off rosters, just because there is such a low batting average floor. And, you know, he's kind of the guy that you probably drop him, and he has a weekend where has 2 homers and 3 steals, and then you pick him back up and he goes over 10 right, with like 7 strikeouts. So, like,
love those.
I think
ones.
It is more of a Raz Slam, a best ball, in like TGFBI and main events in the 15 team NFBC leagues. Like, he should be on rosters all year, and you'll gladly take those. Seemingly what it's going to be like on the downside, like a 2020 season, which even with that low of average is still very, very useful in those leagues.
Yeah, and moving up, staying in the outfield, but moving up the roster rate a little bit to 53% rostered in Yahoo leagues is Taylor Ward. Man, that talk about like a post-hype sleeper here. Steve, because we were all in last year. He was bold predictions and everything, because a couple of years back, remember, we saw that 23 homer, 280 season. And that was like sandwiched where the beginning and end of the season, he looked like a top 10 outfielder. So he was a big, big breakout pick last season. Just never came around. Hit 253, had a 756 OPS. I believe there was a couple injuries in there. Yeah, 60-day injury list last year with a facial fracture.
Yeah, he got hit in the face. Oh, it was gosh, very scary. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I completely forgot about that, the cobwebs. So now we're basically fast forward to now. We've already got three homers after just six games for Taylor Ward. He got caught stealing once as well, so you know he will attempt to run, and he's hitting 320. Of course, it's very early, but under the hood, Steve, it looks really, really promising that this could be right back to the breakout pick we thought from, you know, a couple years back. Age 30 season. Talk to me about Taylor Ward and what was otherwise kind of a boring eye roll offense with the Angels. We could be seeing a breakout here.
Yeah. Whenever Taylor Ward's been healthy, and that has not been often, he's been a good hitter. He had a 137 WRC plus in 2022, which is why we were super excited about him last year. And it was such a shame. Like, as soon as he started to get going last year, it seemed is when he got, and then he got hit in the face. So just been super, super unlucky. But I just think that it's one of those post-hype things where people are probably tired of hearing about Taylor Ward and, you know, the fact that it's taken him so long to get here. But he is a good hitter, and he just needs to stay healthy. Like, he pairs that low 20 strikeout rate with an above-average barrel rate and someone that hits the ball hard at a good clip that, you know, whenever you build one of those leaderboards that we always like to do, it's like filter on K percentage lower than 25%, barrel rate above 10, and a hard hit rate above 40. Like, Taylor Ward shows up on those lists, which is just a sign of a good hitter. And I think that it's just easy to forget because he's been through so much and it's been a little bit of a while, and he's burned people recently in the past. He is striking out a bit more, but he's also swinging 10% more of the time.
That's what we're talking about.
Only whiffing 2% more of the time. So I would expect that K rate to regress to like the 20% career norm, where it's at 30% right now. And he doesn't have a walk, but it's a super small sample as far as Taylor Ward. I know we talked about how plate discipline is important, but I would lean on the track record of Ward there. And try to buy where I can. I think that he should be rostered in much more than 53% of the Yahoo leagues.
Okay, yeah, I like that. I think we've seen enough in the past where we can see a path to him being a fantasy all-star. We saw that for months at a time just 2 years ago, and to see something this convincing again, it's like piecing the results with a narrative, and that's sometimes not fair, but you don't really care when it's a, you know, you're just, it's a rental if it doesn't work out. So that's Taylor Ward. I think of this list, so when you go kind of top to bottom from roster rate, we've got, well, we talked about Christopher Morel. He's rostered pretty much everywhere, but Michael Garcia, 75%. Then it would go Jung-Hoo Lee, 71%. Taylor Ward, 53%. And then you've got your Jose Siri, your Will Benson and Brandon Donovan in that order. So those are the guys. I mean, it feels appropriate. I definitely feel like there's plenty of guys that are under rostered though. Like that is the theme. I do think, honestly, looking at the bunch, and I'm excited with Jose Siri in general for the speed, but of the bunch, I honestly think him and Benson for me would be kind of near the bottom. But yeah, I don't know if you've got any takeaways. I do agree Ward at 53% with what he's showing kind of jumps out as like, man, how is he not rostered more? I think Jung-Hoo Lee as well at 71%. Yeah, I think he should be close to everywhere.
Jung-Hoo Lee should be everywhere. I totally agree. I think my order would be Benson, Donovan, Siri for like the 30% guys.
Gotcha. So I see what you're saying. So you prefer Benson, then Donovan, then Siri. Yeah. All right. Well, first of all, shout out to Rich in the chat. This guy is just carrying the comment section. So if you guys, listen, if you're out there, I see Joe chiming in as well. You guys got to jump in. Rich says, wish I heard Van's view on Lane Thomas before I drafted him. Hey, blind squirrel, Rich. For some reason, whatever reason on the chalkboard, my fades every single year have been like three or four right. So like, I don't like being the storm crow, just like casting clouds. I used to do that in fantasy football where I'd like draft Drew Brees and announce to the league, like, sorry guys, I'm ending his career. And then he would have like a terrible year at age 40. So, yeah, take that for what you will. But we have pitchers next, and that's going to round us out. But we're going to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back. So, Steve, man, it happens fast where we're hearing all these names. It seems like we've got 30 potential pitchers that we want all the shares we can possibly have, but it's just not how drafts work. And then it happens fast. About 2 weeks later, we're in the season. We know who are kind of appearing to be busts. And on the flip side, we're seeing some just incredible breakouts. Then there's the in-betweeners where it's like, you know, I want to see more, or I like this, but the control was wobbly, or look at who the opponent was. One that fits into the should be a breakout category for me is Jared Jones. And this, you know, this was one that we didn't even know would have a Ross or a rotation slot coming out of spring training, and then it got awarded. Nick Pollock, shout out, was all over Jared Jones, one of his favorite names in the home stretch of the offseason. At Miami, 5 2/3 innings, got the win, 10 strikeouts for Jared Jones. He gave up 3 runs, a couple walks, but, and by the way, gets a tougher test with the Orioles next week. But man, if you drafted Jared Jones, you just have to love seeing him put up these numbers. What are your thoughts, Steve? Sadly, I believe I'll double check, but no shares for me. However, I am always a fan of some dominated pitchers. We do have one share. One share is good. Is that in our? No, that's my Raz Slam League. Let's go.
I don't have him anywhere on NFBC, but I do have him in my home league, my home keeper league, and also another 10-team league that I did, or standard roto league. So, like, all my Yahoo, like, leagues with buddies in my home league, I have them. So, do have plenty of shares, just won't be out in the public leagues or the expert leagues, if you want to call them those. That being said, it's really, really hard not to get super, super excited about Jared Jones after just one start. There's an article on Fangraphs by Ben Clemmons that was, let's all get irresponsibly excited about Jared Jones and just break down how good he was in that start versus the Marlins. And it's a big comp, and it's in no means saying that this is 100% going to be the case. But the player that you look at, that you think of when you watch him pitch, is Spencer Strider. It's just an elite, elite hard fastball up in the zone, and then a slider that he commands well that nobody can hit. Like, just a fastball that, like, you watch Spencer Strider, right, and he throws, like, a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, like, right down the middle, and guys just can't hit it, and that's what it seems like with Jared Jones. Nick Pollock, too, also in his roundup, said, like, this is Spencer Strider, so, like, it's not just me, some pitching schmo, or someone who gets way too hyped about it.
Dude, the 7'6", the extension is 7.6. Like, that is beyond Freddy Peralta. Plus, that combine that with the velocity, like, that is nuts for a fastball.
Yeah, yeah, it's impressive. I'm pulling up some of the other stuff, but the height-adjusted VIA is elite, 1.7, 98th percentile. The IVB is 17.7. That's 81st percentile. Extension, 98th percentile. 97 mile an hour is 96th percentile. Like, the fastball is just amazing. And then you look at the scatter plot, the strike zone plot, and it was just all dotted up in the zone. The slider, really good too. It was at 88 miles an hour. Gets good spin on it. So it's hard not to be really, really pumped about Jared Jones. Had a 25% swing strike rate, 77 percentile on the slider too. To throw some cold water on it, because there definitely needs to be. But with him living so, with that fastball being so hard and living up in the zone, when guys guess right, there's going to be some really, really good contact about it. You could tell by like the 98th percent, 98th in the league as far as ideal contact rate, like 40th percentile there, which isn't great, but hey, that's also like something that Spencer Strider deals with. Like, if he has the command, which I'm not sure if he does, if he has the command that Strider does, then he is going to be like a true ace. If he does walk, you know, 10% of the guys, then it could be more of a, you know, mid to high threes ERA, a ton of strikeouts with a bunch of home runs, and still be a really good pitcher.
Yes.
In reality, it's probably going to be somewhere in between that. I just don't know if he has that command yet, and who knows? It's still just one start versus the Marlins, who look absolutely dreadful. But they did square him up a bit. But there is a lot of reason for excitement with Jared Jones.
Yeah, and the walk rate was never like awful. It's been bad in the minors, but not like disastrous. So yeah, I mean, middling whip, regardless. Of every name we've thrown out on the show so far, the fact that Jared Jones,
yeah, Yahoo this is the biggest mistake.
Just 49% rostered. Yeah. Like, literally, you can turn off our show. We won't be offended. Just turn off the show.
Go
focus.
Go add Jared Jones.
Yeah. Concentrate and just get it done, guys. Don't text and drive, and go add Jared Jones. Pull into the McDonald's. So we're gonna keep rolling, Steve, and the next one. Jason Foley is collecting some saves, a couple saves in Detroit. Certainly can tell you I got Alex Lang shares, not Jason Foley shares.
I don't think many people did have Jason Foley shares in the offseason.
Yep, yeah. He was one of the biggest fab bids over the weekend for sure. A couple saves and a win. But talk to me about Jason Foley, 60% rostered in Yahoo leagues. People chasing saves, it makes sense. What do you think of the actual pitcher?
It looks really good. He's like a guy that just added something. Came out this year and started throwing 100 miles an hour with his sinker, and was like automatically thrusted into the first save opportunity that the Tigers had. Got the second one as well, and then pitched in the bottom of the ninth of the tie game and got a win. Yeah, he was throwing like 98 last year, which is really good, but he's averaging 101 with the fastball this year. So added two ticks to that amazing sinker, and he's doubled his swing strike rate. So it looks like closer stuff, and definitely should be added if you need saves. I think Detroit still may. They have some other options, like, in the back end, Shelby Miller's looked really good. So they do have Andrew Chafin if lefties come up, so it may not be like the full share of the closer role. So I wouldn't like panic and drop him if the next save opportunity doesn't go to Foley, depending on matchups. But the stuff is electric. It looks like a closer. And I would go out and add him. Another guy I wanted to bring up, more of like props to us. And I think that someone that we talked about, a bit as a speculation when we heard the Devin Williams news, but Abner Uribe looks like the no doubt closer.
Oh, yeah.
In Milwaukee. And Milwaukee has been winning a bunch of games of the year. He has three saves. He's looked really good. He also had an amazing defensive play and like stretch on a double play to turn the save. I think it was on Tuesday.
I missed that.
So
nice.
he looks good. And if he's still out there, I don't have the roster ship rate for Yahoo for Uribe, but two guys that look absolutely filthy in the back end of bullpens and should be added everywhere, I would say.
Yeah, Uribe is 63%, so they're both kind of neck and neck. Between the two, would you prefer Foley because the full season saves?
Yeah, I guess I would prefer Uribe, 100%.
Same.
And who knows with Devin Williams? The back injury is tough, man. I know they said like 2 to 3 months, but that could easily be a full year. Backs are tough, so it's close. If I only had to add one right now, I would add Uribe just because of the immediacy of the full time role and better team context. So I think the Tigers should be better than they've been, at least offensively too. And they have won a few games. I know it's versus the Mets, and everybody's been beating the Mets. But I would lean Uribe, but it's close. But both should be rostered, much closer to like 80-90% in Yahoo leagues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got, was it one name left, or we got
two names left.
Well, the next one, Steve, I would have never believed.
I'm just gonna let you take this. I know it's too early for victory lap, but you have my permission. It's like a hall.
This
you know,
is, honestly,
you get
this
one
is...
hall pass for a way too early victory lap.
I didn't even know if I can take it.
I am allowing you to do this.
All right,
this
is with my heart and not my head, but my victory lap, because if you would have told me a couple of years ago that I would be here in 2024 calling myself the Nick Pivetta guy, that might be my season-long, whatever the epitaph is of my fantasy season, which probably will end in the casket is with Nick Pivetta being my SP2 in my home league. And yeah, this is so far so good, at least on the results front. Although he did go against at Oakland today, 5 innings, just 3 strikeouts. And when I say today, I mean Wednesday, no runs. And the whip at 120, not ideal. He got out of a bases loaded jam, which you do not like getting through the Athletics with the skinnier teeth, but a lot of people were saying it was just an off day. And he was saying like, you know, I didn't have it today. Mm-hmm. Thank my infield, our great, great defense, all that stuff behind him. But the first start was much more impressive with 10 strikeouts in his debut. Although in terms of the opponents, that was at Seattle, and they've struggled out of the gate as well. So similar to Mr. Jared Jones, he's got the Orioles next week for his next matchup. That one will be telling, I believe. But in terms of all the stuff under the hood, I mean, he's getting the swing and miss. I know, Steve, you pulled in a tweet here from at Taylor Tarter on Twitter. There is one pitcher who is top 10 in stuff plus, pitching plus, and location plus, and it is Nick Pivetta. So he fits the mold for me, man, because I do think one niche, it actually comes from Fantasy NBA. One of my favorite analysts always talks about the old man squad and that there's a lot of upside, if you will, or potential with guys who are not the young 22, 23-year-olds. You can find upside elsewhere. And I think Pivetta is kind of the poster boy that, like, how many times have we been burned? How many times have we gotten excited? You got to remove sometimes, like, if there are true changes, like he did with the sweeper, the whirly bird last year, the numbers jumped off the page for where he was going in drafts. So far, so good. He's got a 0.82 ERA and a 0.82 whip. So more pleas from Mr. Nick Pivetta. But yeah, we'll see how the Orioles starts go. Anything to add there, Steve? I know you sadly you don't have any shares, but for me, I've got 4 out of 5 industry leagues, and then my home league as well. So I'm on the roller coaster.
No, I mean, I think it's just more assurance of those changes that he made last year are real. I know there was some concern in spring about like his locations and the shape of some of his pitches, but they still look good. And like, if this is, I know it's the A's, but if this is what he's able to do when he doesn't have it and there's a lot of, right? What's like the rule of thumb? Like pitchers say, like it's two out of every three starts they have their stuff. One start they just may not have it at all, whatever it is. But if this is when he doesn't have his best stuff, like look out when he does. I know the Orioles are tough, but like I'd still absolutely start him because I think Pivetta is that good. So, and that Taylor Tarter tweet was prior to today's game, so I don't know if that's still true, and it may not be if he didn't have his best stuff, according to him. But it'll be interesting to see the numbers on that, and I'm still in on Pivetta everywhere. Even though I don't have shares, I think he's a great arm to have for your rotation.
We did have a question in the chat from Joe here asking about what about Aaron Civale, who, by the way, fits the mold for the type of late bloomer.
Definitely.
You know, this is kind of mini Eflin here, or this year's Eflin, just 28 with the Rays. You're always wanting to look at, like, you know, tinkering with the pitch mix with the Rays, and Savali's always been a tinkerer. I mean, when I think of guys, like, honestly, bringing up this name, but Trevor Bauer and Savali are like two of the names I think of people who are constantly like changing their pitch mix. And if you look, he's thrown his sinker 29% this year versus 18% last year. He's dropped the curveball quite a bit. What I'm a little concerned about is that curveball was actually one of his best swing and miss pitches. So I am a little just at a surface kind of scratching my head at what the Rays got going on here. But that said, so far the results have looked solid with the more than solid with the Blue Jays, six innings, six strikeouts, just one earned run on that one. And then picked up the win there and then picked up a tough luck loss against the Rangers today as we record, six innings, eight strikeouts, again, just one earned run. So it is, so far a great start for Civale. I think that's a great name. Honestly, just again, looking at what's going on here, it's like not really seeing like the velo jump. There's something here that we've got to be overlooking, but maybe that's a quick Twitter search. But yeah, good name there. I don't know, Steve, if you got anything to add on Civale.
No, it's someone that I wish I paid more. Not that I didn't pay attention to, but it's sort of what we bought into last year with the Rays with who's your boy
Eflin.
Eflin, right? Like it's just the Rays identified something that Civale does really well, maximize that. Even though there doesn't look like they're doing it this year, maybe we got to find out what
they're doing. Oh, it's a new sweeper. He just added a brand new sweeper, and that's getting not great whiffs, but has yet to give up a hit so far. So
yeah, so a breaking ball that you could throw for strikes, like leave it to the Rays to figure out something like that, right? I wish I just blindly said Civale Rays draft more often in during draft season.
Yeah, that's a great one, and I think Rich brought up Shelby Miller. I don't know if we have any closing thoughts there, but Shelby Miller.
I think he was, mocking
being facetious.
The Reggie Miller looking good YouTube video. Boom, boom goes the dynamite. Are you familiar with that, Van?
That's a classic here. There's not a whole lot to do in the Midwest, Steve. So any of those viral videos were usually all over. That said, Shelby Miller 4 scoreless this season. Let's not over.
Yeah, hey, I brought him up as a guy who could maybe steal some saves from Foley over there in Detroit.
Oh man. Okay. Well, Steve, I'm off to Arizona for a bachelor party weekend. Somehow.
Wait, we got one more name to talk about here. Probably.
Oh
the most.
My God. Okay. I'm sorry. I defer to you, and hopefully no one dropped off to hear about my travel plans.
Yeah. I got some travel plans this weekend too. We can get to that after we talk about this. But I know we're running a little long here. But hey, it's the first week of the season, so we could squeeze in one more name. And it's not just any name. It's probably the most exciting arm that was basically available in a lot of leagues even up to today or yesterday when he started versus the Braves, and that's Garrett Crochet. He's still at just 57% in Yahoo last Yahoo as far as roster ships. So he is still out there, and this is another one of like, stop listening to the podcast,
yes,
and go add him. But he looks absolutely amazing. Any concern about facing just that weak lineup in Detroit in his first start on opening day was quelled with that amazing second start in Atlanta. Overall, he has 13 innings pitched, 16 strikeouts, one walk. Went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts, 1 walk versus Atlanta. Lance Brodowski, another guy that I bring up a lot, who does amazing work over on Twitter and YouTube, did an amazing breakdown after his first start. Talked about his insane cutter, which is super, super hard. It's like 93 miles an hour, moves a lot, and he compared it to Jose Alvarado. So, like, this is a guy with Jose Alvarado's cutter who's a starter. And then, you know, an amazing fastball that has great velocity, good shape, elite extension, and then a sweeper that he's able to get a swing and misses to. It's just everything that you could have hoped for with Crochet, like when you dreamed on him, like looking at him as a prospect, even though he really only made like 12 starts in college at Florida or Tennessee, I think he went to.
Mm-hmm.
And really did not pitch much in the minors, but like when you saw him, you could just tell that, hey, maybe something clicks here, and it looks like he has. Go check out Lance's breakdown on YouTube. I believe it was his most recent video from earlier this week. But he does a great job getting into like the pitch shapes and everything like that. But Crochet looks absolutely incredible, and is a must add. Probably, you know, along with who did we say earlier?
Jared Jones.
With Jared Jones. I think I'd prioritize Crochet, though, and then Jared Jones.
Well, yeah. For wins, I think just the White Sox maybe. Are so bad, but he might go deeper in games more often.
And Nick does have some hesitations that the command isn't going to stick, and it may not be as sticky as it has been in the first
two
starts.
It's tough, but honestly, it's a great comp because both of them pretty much sit 97, and both of them have extension. I mean, I know it seems arbitrary, but for people who know, like, again, the best example is Freddie Peralta, who for years everyone said how dominant his fastball was, even though it only sat like 94 miles per hour because of the fact that he had like 7 foot extension. Jared Jones has 7'6" and Crochet is 7'1". So both of these guys not only throw extremely hard, but it just jumps on hitters right away. And some of the very best pitchers, that's the type of indicator. You know who else is kind of in that ballpark who we didn't talk about is Luis Gil, who looked really good, and we have some shares as well, Steve. It had some wobbly command and mm-hmm. Located the fastball a little bit low. I was watching that start. But for a pretty good Diamondbacks offense, he had 6 strikeouts and 4 2/3. He's another guy who kind of sits 97 with close to 7 foot extension, but not quite as much as those other guys. Between Jared Jones, Luis Gil, and Garrett Crochet, how would you rank those three on who you want?
It's really close between Jones and Crochet.
Okay.
I think I would lead Crochet, honestly, because he's just done it twice. That would be like a tiebreaker for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And against the Braves.
Yeah, right? And against the Braves. And then Gil. But that's not to say that I don't like Gil. I have a ton of shares of Gil. I believe in NFBC and in my home leagues, too. Yeah, I have him on an FBC team, and then on two, actually, and then he's in like most of my home leagues. I have him there too, so like Gil a lot, but I would go the other two guys and give the tiebreaker to Crochet over Jones. But that being said, I still really, really like all those guys and think they could be mainstays mm-hmm. in your rotation, and exactly why I like to fade the aces, at least the early ones.
Oh yeah, yep. And Rich just dropped in the chat Ronaldo Lopez as well. We're gonna have names.
Yeah, we got names
throughout the month. Yeah. So yeah, these are the ones. This is exactly what I'm saying. That this is why I don't have Christopher Morel, because that part of the draft there's like 50 of these names. And what a fun time of the year to see which ones are real versus fake. And sadly, AJ Puck is on my chalkboard, Steve. Out of all those names, AJ Puck still is early. So hopefully
he looked, despite the line today, he looked better. The defense
step in the right direction.
Yeah, the defense let him down. Yeah. Yeah, and I still think there's a path, and I know you might not want to hear this, but I think there's a path for AJ Puck to be like a dominant closer, especially with how shaky the back end of the Marlins bullpen has been. So there's a few paths from there, and I think that Puck still has time to figure it out. But it may be in the bullpen with the Marlins guys returning soon, and Braxton Garrett and Edward Cabrera somewhat soon. But hey, if Edward Cabrera walks the world like he normally does, they could go right back to Puck.
Yep, absolutely. Well, appreciate you guys tuning in. Again, couldn't be happier that in this most exciting time of the baseball calendar year, you guys are joining us. We will be here every Thursday. Also Wednesday night, you can tune into the live streams as we record. It's usually right around 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern out there for Steve. Appreciate the interaction in the chat room tonight, guys. And if you guys have any players that you want us to cover in future shows, you guys can always reach out and hit us up on the show feed at Wins Above Pod on Twitter, or I'm at @Van_Verified. Steve is at @Stav8818. Steve, you got a Philly trip. I got an Arizona trip. I will be in 86 degree weather tomorrow, and it was snowing this morning in Peoria. So, yeah, good vibes, man. And very, very happy to be having baseball here. And now we're back to like texting each other every day. So, life is good, man. Like, this is it. Closing thoughts from you before we wrap up here.
I got a trip as well. Headed to Philly for WrestleMania with Rich. Shout out Rich in the comments. Work and Heel is a good fantasy wrestling crossover team name for those who roster Luis Heel. I know there's a lot of crossover in the fantasy community, the wrestling community. So. It's an exciting weekend.
How many years have you guys done WrestleMania?
I mean, I think Rich has been, this is his probably, it's definitely in the double digits for him. I think this is my like fifth or sixth, not in a row. I didn't go last year to LA, but I think Rich has been doing this since like 2012. And then really the only one they missed was when there wasn't one with fans in the pandemic. 15, this is 15 coming up for them. So. Absolutely incredible.
That's amazing. Well, I know those trips with that deep of tradition, it's like as much as you love the event almost doesn't even need to happen. There's so many things.
We would have a blast just being in the general area. Yeah, absolutely.
That's like our road trip. So you guys enjoy that. Sounds like one of the very top weekends of the year. And I will enjoy a bachelor party for shout out to Cody. He is TJ's co-manager in my home league. So we'll be talking fantasy baseball, and the Fire Stick is in the luggage so that we can get MLB TV going. Nice. But that rounds us out, you guys, for episode 133, talking about guys we're interested after 1 week. And yes, the overreactions. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Later. Nice. Well done. Let me stop my...